Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. I'm actually pre-recording this show a couple of days early because I will be in San Francisco on Tuesday, and I wanted to make sure I got a program out for you. I'm sitting here at home. I'm drinking a new brew of tea. It's funny because I'm calling it herbal tea, and that's nothing new, right? We all know about herbal teas, but I've made this with herbs. What a concept. I have a lot of different herbs and spices here at home, and we haven't been drinking a lot of caffeine. Lots of reasons for that, but I just find it's a nicer place without caffeine in the world. It's nice to just have natural energy from eating the right foods and from exercising and breathing. And I've made a brew of thyme, rosemary, sage, and anise seeds. It's actually, I thought of it thinking parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, but I didn't want the parsley. And I find that adding a little licorice flavor, like from the anise, makes it a little sweeter or smooths out any bitterness that there might be. And it's a great tea. I use a teaspoon of each in about 700 milliliters of water. Do I have to do a conversion into ounces for that? I use a Breville teapot and it's in milliliters, so that's how I do that. But it's really, really nice. And you probably know this, but herbs have so many nutritional benefits, health benefits. I'm using it especially now. I always love to drink tea, warm drinks, hot beverages. But I find when the seasons change, I start to feel all kinds of things in my nasal microbiome. I just read about the nasal microbiome. The microbiome is like another person that lives within us, and everybody's talking about it because we're learning so much about it. We still have so much more to learn, of course, but this is like the final frontier, the microbiome. And my nasal microbiome is feeling a little itchy and irritated. It does this when the seasons change, and I find that rinsing daytime, in the morning when I get up, and in the evening with my Neti Pot makes all the difference in the world. So if you're experiencing any kind of seasonal changes and discomfort, nosy in your nose or with a runny nose, something like that, I make these recommendations. The Neti Pot, I know some people are kind of creeped out by the Neti Pot because what it is salt water that you put in a special pot. And you tilt your head sideways and you pour it in one nasal passage and it drips out the other. And then you reverse and you go through the other way. It's an odd kind of thing if you're not familiar with it or used to it. But really, it brings a lot of relief and a lot of benefit. I've got my distiller going. And that's giving us a bit of background noise that I hope to edit out when I'm finished with this. Because you don't need to hear all of that. There are so many different background noises in our homes. Do you notice that? Aside from those of us who have tinnitus, which is plenty noise, but the refrigerator hums, and there are so many other hums. I first became aware of hums when my brother used to talk about it because he's a sound engineer, amongst other things, playing music and being a musician. And when you're recording things, you are so much more perceptive of the sounds around us. And there are so many, and some of them aren't as pleasant as others. Especially when we live in the city, there's all kinds of noises. But you know, I remember camping in Costa Rica, which I haven't done in quite a long time. But when I did, I was in a very unpopulated area in a jungle environment, in a tent. And the evening was filled with so many sounds, and it wasn't sounds of distillers running or refrigerators running. It was more like a musical cacophony, some kind of modern-day symphony. And every few hours, the channel would change, the sounds would change. Lots of repetitive noises and tweets of all different frequencies. Really fascinating. So I guess we're supposed to live in an environment of sound if we have the ability to hear. Last week, I told you about an event I went to, the Vegan Lady Boss meeting. And if you remember, I was so energized, so rejuvenated, so filled with hope with all of the different projects that were going on and the entrepreneurs that were there and the people that were doing such good things for the community and the world around us. I just felt so good. And then I went to another event. It was the Plant-Powered Manhattan monthly meeting. And they're a group that are part of the Plant Pure Nation pods. Have you heard of them? I believe it was founded by Nelson Campbell. He's one of the sons of T. Colin Campbell. And T. Colin Campbell has built a wonderful dynasty with his family. And they're all doing wonderful things around food and helping people eat a healthy, nutritious, whole food plant diet. And one way is the way Nelson's doing it with creating these chapters around the country. And it's amusing to me because when I was involved with another organization, EarthSave, back in the late 90s and early 2000s, we had chapters all over the country doing something similar. And then they kind of faded away. And now it seems like we have a need for them again. And I think that's fantastic. I went because the speaker was J. Morris Hicks. We call him Jim. I've had him on this program before. He's a wonderful guy, and I got to know him when he used to come to my EarthSave lectures back in the early 2000s, and it was very inspirational for him. He met all the speakers in a few months that we had. We had Dr. T. Colin Campbell and Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and Dr. Joel Fuhrman, and he saw them all and he was moved by them all, and it led him to a new path in his retirement. He was an executive VP for Ralph Lauren, and he's done quite a bit of work encouraging plant-based eating and focusing on the environment and climate change. So his talk was primarily on climate change. What was interesting about it was very depressing. So here it is. I went to one event where I was just invigorated, enthused, and rejuvenated, thinking about all the wonderful projects that are going on and the hope that everyone had in making this world better. And then I had another presentation that was filled with very accurate statistics and data about our current situation. I'm not saying one was better than the other. They were just different. I think they're both necessary. But then the next day, I was filled with so much sadness. I had opened up my heart and my brain to the knowledge of what's happening today. And I'm very aware of it. It's just, I don't want to think about it, or at least think about it in a certain way. I don't want to think about it in a doom and gloom way. Why? Because it doesn't feel good. Now, it may inspire some people like a call to action. But I think being around people that are enthusiastic and have hope and ideas and are putting their ideas into action is beneficial. I think it not only feels better, but I think we're more productive that way. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. Nobody knows what's going to happen. There have been so many different predictions. Some predicted that we would have already seen a major end of the world kind of disaster. So fortunately, that hasn't happened, at least fortunately for those of us who live on the planet today. There were a bunch of other world events and personal events that had happened all at once after listening to Jim's lecture. It just brought me to a very emotional space. Gary was right there with me, and I'm very fortunate to have his support and his understanding and his encouragement. So we sulked in sadness for a while, and, you know, sometimes it's just good to do that. It's just good to let it all out. And then, purged, cleansed, you begin again. And we're committed to beginning again. When I talk to people who are going through a health crisis, like cancer, for example, I always tell them that there's always hope while they're alive. The game isn't over. You can always turn things around while you're still here. There's not a whole lot you could do once it's over. And on a grander scale, I feel that while we're all still here, living on the planet, there's still plenty of hope of cleaning things up and turning things around and making things better for all life on Earth. So how do we do that? Well, Jim gave us many, many statistics and pictures of things that are going on in the world. And one of them, which is really daunting, is the melting of the polar ice caps, because that's going to tremendously change the balance of things. Most of the scientists think that the result is going to be quite dire. When we lose the polar ice caps, they're white, and they do a lot of reflecting of sun and heat. And when that's gone, the sun and the heat can come into the Earth and make everything even hotter. And that will disrupt so many balances. Now, maybe a new balance will ultimately be achieved at some point, and maybe that'll be okay. I don't know that our scientists can really predict everything with their models, but getting to a new balance is going to be, it's going to be really rough. We're already seeing all kinds of impacts of climate change with hurricanes and droughts and the destruction that they bring. Many people are living in great discomfort today with not a lot of opportunity. And of course, we have over a billion people experiencing food insecurity. So for those of us who have a place to live and are comfortable and have activities and work, maybe some of us are struggling a little bit financially, but if we're eating and we have our friends and family around us, there's a lot to be grateful for. What can we do? For me, the answer is clear. It is the answer to most problems on the planet. And guess what, folks? It's all about food. That's why I talk about it's all about food, because I truly and sincerely believe, and I know that the science and the data is behind me, that when all of us choose plants and eat plants, especially organic plants, we can turn climate change around. We can improve the environment, and that means the soil, the water, the air. We can have dramatic improvement in personal health. Chronic diseases will go to a very, very small number. Depression will improve because diet affects depression. There's so much depression around. It's just a win-win overall. And when people feel better, they're going to be more creative, more imaginative, more productive. Just like the melting of the polar ice caps will bring on a momentum of things, a domino effect. When everyone chooses to eat plant foods, it will also bring a domino effect in a different direction. It's just so tricky because some of us know this information, but how do we get it to the masses? When I was talking with Tobias Lennert, and he's doing wonderful things. I spoke with him a few weeks ago. He has a guidebook on how we should do our activism, on how we should communicate to people. And most of us have recognized that we can't scream and try and cram information into people's heads. We can't, like, grab them by the shoulders and say, "Don't you get it?" Which is what a lot of us want to do right now. Because it's urgent. It's urgent. I made a parallel earlier today. You know, I was comparing the hope one might have with a cancer diagnosis or a health crisis, where there's always hope while they're still alive to turn things around. And while we're all here, there's always hope to turn things around, even if it's looking pretty dire. And just like with a disease like cancer, especially if it's aggressive, it's important to eat a healthy whole food plant diet. But when the cancer is very aggressive, the whole food plant diet is not enough to turn things around. The individual who wants to heal and get cured needs to do many other things at the same time. I recommend meditation and affirmations, which are very powerful. The mind is more powerful than we know. And there might be some other interventions that are necessary, like surgery and maybe an immunotherapy or a chemotherapy. Sometimes changing the diet, the natural soft approach, isn't enough. So I'm thinking maybe the natural soft approach in our activism isn't enough. I'm not saying I want everybody to grab everyone they know and scream at them and say, "Come on, we've got to do this now." But we need more action. And complaining on Facebook isn't enough action. We need more action. And I don't have the answers, but I'm putting it out to you. Please, what do you think? What do you think we can do that is more powerful than the gentle activism? Taking time, explaining things in a loving, non-judgmental, compassionate way to people. It's lovely, but many people aren't interested. When we talk about climate change, I think a lot of people acknowledge that it's a problem. Of course, there are the deniers. Thank you very much. But we love living in Disneyland. We love this fantasy mentality that everything is going to be fine, and we don't have to do anything. Well, everything may be fine, but I think that there's a lot that we need to do to get there. One thing that is really important to me is not to be shy, not to be embarrassed, not to be apologetic about the message we want to share with other people. There's no time to be apologetic. There's no time to be embarrassed. There's no time to be shy. Yes, I think we should be polite. We should be respectful. But every opportunity we have, we need to be talking about the importance of eating plant foods and not animal foods. We've all got friends that are bacon lovers. They need to get over it. They need to know what's going on around them. Somehow, we each need to find a way to communicate to those around us what is going on so that they don't feel that it's their fault, that we're blaming them. This is important. If we want to approach our friends and family about eating bacon, for example, there's got to be a way to do it that doesn't target the individual, like, "Look what you're doing, it's horrible." Just look what's around us and the ramifications of having these different industries and what they're doing, taking a broader picture somehow, relating to other things that might be important to the individual, like their children and the environment that we're leaving them. We need to come up with these arguments or these conversations to reach out to people, and it's going to be different for everyone that we talk to. But if you work at a company or you are part of a social organization, a religious organization, now is the time to organize an event or a lot of events or a workshop to help your community get this plant message. I like using the word vegan. I've had many different people on this program who talk about whether they think it's good to use the word vegan or whether it isn't. I'm one who thinks it is good. When we were at the event where J. Morris Hicks was speaking, he has his own program called Four Leaf, and it's very nice, and he's using it with some businesses to help them help their employees eat better, which will ultimately lower their insurance costs because it's all about money, isn't it? He's talking about his Four Leaf program, and whatever you want to call it, it's fine with me. Just get the message out. But I think that using the word vegan is important. Now, some will say that people turn off when they hear the word vegan, but for someone like me, who's been vegan for 30 years, and I've got some friends who've been vegan for longer. 30 years ago, nobody knew the word vegan. I would talk to people and say I'm vegan, and they would look at me like I'm speaking another language. People know what vegan means today, and I think we should use that currency we have. There's value to that. People know what it is. And whether they want to turn off at that point because they don't want to accept the reality of their actions, that's one thing. But I think it's important to use that word because people know what it means. And maybe people are confused about the meaning. I just said they know what it means, but maybe they don't know all about it. Maybe they don't know the specifics. And that's where we can come along and, in a loving, non-judgmental, compassionate way, share our ideas about it. It needs to be on the table all the time, at mealtime and any other time. And it's extremely frustrating that there are many people who are concerned about the environment and climate change and never talk about changing their diet. There's a program on this station that does that all the time, and I'm gritting my teeth just thinking about it. But why is that? Why is that? People have this kind of protein myth, protein blinder thing going on, and it's one of our greatest flaws. Denial is not just a river in Egypt. Humans like to be in denial. We've seen that a lot lately, especially in our government. Maybe it's a defense mechanism or a survival mechanism. I don't know, but it's not helping us today. I had mentioned last week, since it was World Food Day, that the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization has a goal of meeting or ending food insecurity by 2030. 2030. That sounds like a long way away, and it's 12 years from now. Is that incredible? 2030. In the year 2030. Anyway, we have 12 years to meet that goal, and there are a lot of other goals that are supposed to be met in 2030. Some of them are related to climate change in terms of reducing the parts per million of carbon dioxide we put into the atmosphere and other greenhouse gases. And frankly, I don't think we're going to meet any of them. I suppose one way we can meet the 2030 goal of feeding everyone on this planet is if we have some sort of environmental crisis where many people don't survive and there are a lot less people. But I still don't think that would help food insecurity, because there's always been a certain number of the population who have gone hungry. That's just the way life with humans has been. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to matter whether there are 100,000 or a billion or 7 billion, 8 billion people on the planet. Some people are always going to go hungry. And a lot of that has to do with the distribution problem. because we can still grow a lot of food. We're just not getting it to all the people who need it. The year 2030 is going to be an interesting one, and I hope to see you all there. I have to admit I'm feeling a little guilty because I'm traveling to California, and whenever we fly in a plane, we use a lot of energy that is not very good for the environment. And frankly, I haven't quite figured out how to avoid that situation because my partner Gary and I go to California a lot, mostly for work. But this time we're actually going for pleasure for the most part. I will be singing in a memorial concert for a conductor producer I used to work with who retired and recently passed. And this concert is just going to be filled with so much love. I can't wait. I will be singing the song Impossible Dream. Are you familiar with that song? It's from the musical Manifold Mancha, and it's sung by the main character, a man, Don Quixote. It's been sung by many singers over the years. And when I was in the show playing Aldonza Dulcinea, there's a part in the show where Don Quixote sings the song and she listens. And when you're doing the show for days and days and weeks and weeks and weeks, it takes some planning and effort to stay focused and look interested every day, because for the audience, it's the first time. But for you, you've been doing it over and over and over, and you want it to always stay fresh. And many different performers and actors have tricks that they use, tricks or skills. And I chose to do something during that song that worked for me. Some would say you really shouldn't do it this way, but I did, and it was helpful. So what I did when I would be listening to this song as Don Quixote, or the man who was playing Don Quixote would sing this song, is I would think about the animals in factory farms. The words in the song are very compelling: to dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable stars. This is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to that glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm till I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man, scorned and covered with scars, still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable star. To me, that is an incredible song for an activist. And I would hear those words. And I don't like to think about factory farming because it brings up a lot of emotion in me, knowing about the pain and suffering of so many innocent individuals every day, billions of them every year. And I would hear that song, I would get emotional, and I would recommit to my work and my activism every time Don Quixote sang it. So it's very meaningful to me to have the opportunity to sing it again for an audience, especially now when I feel it's so important that we up our energy with activism. And I will be using that opportunity to talk to as many people as I can in a loving, non-judgmental, and compassionate way, to understand the situation that we're in today. I visualize a number of things singing that song, the line, to march into hell for a heavenly cause. You know what I think about? I think about that time when I was the lone vegan and I spoke to 250 cattle producers about how animal agriculture affects climate change. It really felt like Gary and I were marching into hell when we went to that Nevada feedlot and met with all those cattle producers. They were very welcoming. They were very kind. They were very nice. But knowing what was going on and what their livelihood was all about, that was hell. That was definitely hell. It was definitely hell for the cattle, for the cows and the bulls that live there. So I use song sometimes to preach my message. And maybe people won't understand the symbolism directly. Maybe they'll ask me about it. And that would be a great opportunity because I have something to tell them. On this same trip, we're actually going to make it to Mendocino. I have always wanted to go to Mendocino. I lived in California for 9 years. I used to commute there for 6 years every 2 weeks. I have been in California many times, Northern California, the Bay Area. Mendocino is not far away. It's always been a dream of mine to go. And somehow, I have never gotten there. We tried to get there in March. And we were leaving from New York to do some work in San Jose. And we had scheduled a couple of days extra. And just before we were about to leave, we found out there was a snowstorm coming in. And we had to move our trip to a few days later. And that meant we couldn't go to Mendocino. Well, we're trying again. And we're going to go next week. We were very fortunate to be gifted a two-night stay at the Stanford Inn. I've had the owners of the Stanford Inn on this show, Jeff and Joan Stanford. If you have a chance, I really recommend listening to that interview. It's very inspiring. It's very upbeat. They have put a lot of work and time and love into this place. They have the restaurant, The Ravens, and we're finally going to get there. So I will be reporting in my daily blog what vegans eat about it. You can see what we choose to eat while we're there. I plan on taking lots of long walks in the fresh air, maybe do a canoe ride, and just enjoy the space and the love that's in this place. And just get all infused for some more hard work. It's really important as an activist to do a few things that nourish your soul, give you joy, keep you uplifted. It's hard work. And there are many crazy things that are wrong with this world, but there are also many wonderful things. And some of them don't have to cost a lot of money. And I'm going to tell you something that gave us a lot of joy. We don't have a hired housekeeper for our apartment. We do our own cleaning here. And we keep things very organized and tidy, but still over time, things just get messy. One of the three laws of thermodynamics is entropy is always increasing. Randomness is always increasing. And it feels that way in the space where we live, where randomness and messiness is increasing, and the only way to tidy it up is to put energy in, and that means cleaning it up. So we did a major cleaning, some purging, and now everything is just so lovely. I just like sitting and sipping some tea and sitting in this peaceful space. So I encourage you, if you have an opportunity, to tidy up. Take care of a few of those things that have been on your list that are bugging you, that you want to fix or tidy up or get rid of. It will feel so good. And then you can make a nice meal and celebrate in your lovely space. Okay, another change of subject. Halloween is coming up, and I just want to say for those of you who want to offer candy, I like going to the naturalcandystore.com. They have a variety of candies that are vegan, gluten-free, non-GMO. They don't use any artificial colorings okay, it's a treat and it's filled with sugar, which isn't really good for us. But if we're just celebrating a holiday and we don't have a lot of treats and sugary items once a year or once every now and then, isn't a terrible thing. And this candy store has a lot of fun options. And this is what I will be giving to my neighbors who come, and I'll feel a little better that what I'm giving them doesn't have artificial colors and flavorings and genetically modified who knows what, and they're fun. It's probably a little tight to make your order now and get it by Halloween, but you could rush it or just take a look over there and keep it in mind for next year. I don't get anything by mentioning this company. I just want you to know that I got my candy there this year. They have different treats for different holidays, but they also have just regular candy. And one of my favorites is the Ocho coconut bar. It's coconut covered in chocolate and it's organic. And it's sweet, but not overly sweet. And they have mini Ocho bars. And that's one of the things that I got to put in everybody's trick-or-treat bags. I think it'll be really nice. We'll probably talk more about Halloween next week because it will be the day before Halloween. And I'll just have to say that the witches and goblins and vampires and ghosts seem pretty tame compared to the monsters that exist today in our culture. The monsters meaning regular people that are roaming the planet doing some pretty awful things can be pretty scary. Halloween seems like fun and light compared to the real scary things that are going on today. Here's another scary thing. You know, I talk to people I mentioned before who are going through health crises, and someone mentioned to me a product that they were told to consume 5 days before surgery and that they would be given 3 times a day for 3 days, I think, post-surgery. And it's something called Impact Advanced Recovery, and it's from the Nestle company. And the dietitian that was recommending it said that it would improve recovery and that studies have shown that it's beneficial. And I looked at the ingredients. Oh my goodness, are you familiar with this product? Okay, the first ingredient is water. Water's cool. Second ingredient, sugar. Okay, they've lost me right there. The second ingredient is sugar. Refined sugar is not a healthy food. Sugar helps promote cancer. Why is it in a drink that is promoted for advanced recovery? It's an immunonutrition drink. You know what it is? It's a watery, sugary, milky, oily drink with vitamins in it. This is not a healthy drink, and if you're encouraged to take this during surgery or for any other reason, feel free to email me at info@realmeals.org, and I will offer up some alternatives or give you a few statements to give to your dietitian or whoever is recommending it on why you don't want to consume it. But I'll just give you a few right here. The third ingredient is calcium calcinate, which is from milk, obviously. You may recall the study that T. Colin Campbell often shows in his presentations from some work he had did when he was young from several decades ago, that he did on rats, where he fed them casein, and the casein turned their cancer on, and when they removed the casein, it turned the cancer off. It was digital. His graph is very compelling, and casein is linked to some extent with cancer. So the question is, why is it the third ingredient in this drink? Fourth ingredient, sodium calcinate, another milk derivative. It has fish oil in it from anchovy and sardines. And then it's got corn oil, natural and artificial flavor. We've talked about natural flavor on this program before and how unnatural natural flavor can be and where it can come from. Artificial flavor, too, can also provoke all kinds of problems in our digestive system. Then there's a mess of vitamins, cellulose gel, cellulose gum, sucralose, which is an artificial sweetener, Splenda. And there is plenty of evidence that artificial sweeteners cause numerous gut problems, not something that you want to put in your body, especially when you're going through surgery or you're in some sort of health crisis. What are they thinking? What do they know? Who are these experts? This mixture also contains vitamin A palmitate and folic acid. And for those of you who follow my favorite doctor, Joel Fuhrman, he will tell you not to supplement with vitamin A and folic acid. Rather, you should get your carotenoids from food and your folate from food. Because when you supplement with vitamin A and folic acid, you can increase your risk of cancer. So giving this delightful solution to cancer patients in order to improve their recovery is a curious thing. Needless to say, I don't recommend it. Somehow I think, though, that Nestle just wanted to get in on the market that Ensure has a big stake in, because looking at the Ensure product, it's very similar to the Nestle product. It's got water, corn maltodextrin, sugar, milk protein concentrate, a blend of vegetable oils, canola, corn, soy protein isolate, and a variety of vitamins, including vitamin A palmitate and folic acid, things we want to avoid. And there you have it. Although, looks like turmeric is one of the ingredients in Ensure. And turmeric is a good thing. Maybe they use it for color. So in the last part of the show, I want to talk about my favorite thing, food, delicious food, eating delicious food. And I really wish everyone on the planet could join us in this space of eating the food that is not only so yummy and delicious, but so good for us and for the planet. And we offer many recipes at responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's my nonprofit where I live. And I want to direct you there because holidays are coming. We have Halloween coming up and then Thanksgiving and then the winter holidays, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. And it's autumn in New York. It's my favorite time. And these are really good times for special, cozy, yummy recipes. So again, I want to direct you to Responsible Eating and Living. You can watch our Halloween video, which is a lot of fun. It's in two parts. And in that video, we make a fondue, two fondues, a cashew cheese fondue and a chocolate fondue, which is really fun for a Halloween party. And then you can check out if you're planning ahead to make a Thanksgiving meal. Don't fret, because we've got some wonderful recipes for you, and they're right here for free at our website. And if you have any questions, you wonder if one thing will go with another, you're looking for ideas, feel free to email me at info@realmeals.org. I'm here for you, and I want you to have the most delicious event you possibly can every day. Make every day a delicious event. I've said it many times, but the best form of activism, especially when it comes to getting people interested in food, is to prepare something that is yummy and delicious and put it in people's mouths. And then they're interested. And that's a great conversation starter. I'm thinking about making some pot pies. That was something I really loved as a kid. My mom never made them homemade, of course. She used to get those Swanson frozen pot pies. I love the crust and the gooey thick sauce, and even the vegetables. And we have a pot pie recipe that is not only gooey and yummy with a great crust, but it's a gluten-free crust. And the filling is full of things that are good for you. And I think it's time to bring that out. I will admit it's a little high on the fat side because I do use Earth Balance or vegan butter in my crust. And maybe I should review that and see if I could make it a little cleaner. But it's still a yummy, cozy dish and probably something that you could make that would interest other people in eating this way. Now, the one thing we were talking about this week at some of these events that we were at was salt. Now, here in our home, we don't use a lot of salt. And I have to give Gary a lot of credit because he's really been working his way off of salt. But when you're not familiar with eating healthy foods, especially healthy foods that don't have salt, you don't think that they're tasty. They taste bland because you may have a collection of taste buds that have been numbed by the standard American diet. Taste buds that have been numbed by sugar, oil, and salt. So if you are preparing something for other people, people that aren't used to eating as healthy as you may eat, I do recommend adding a little more salt than you're used to. It's something that it pains me to do in some ways because I don't really want to eat something that's really salty. And I don't make my food too salty, but I do add salt when I'm making food for other people that I know are used to eating salt because I want them to like the food. So there are some compromises we make. It's all about compromises. And it's important to keep that in mind when you're preparing food for people who aren't on the diet that you're on or who may not be used to eating healthy foods. We're all in a different place on the food continuum. So when trying to think of what to make for people who aren't used to plant-based eating, the best things are typically the comfort foods when it comes to savory foods, mashed potatoes, something with a flavorful, rich gravy, things that bring back warm memories of love and family and satisfaction in the belly. And then the other things that people love are desserts. And people are always surprised. You don't even have to say that your dessert is vegan if you bring them a chocolate cake. Just, it's chocolate cake. And then afterwards, when they're going, oh my God, this is so good, can I have the recipe? You can say, and by the way, it's vegan. That's the best way to do it. It's extra challenging when it comes to food to decide how you're going to approach your activism, because not only do we want to get people off the animal and we want to get people eating plants because we want to turn climate change around, but there's also this health aspect. And I've been doing this for 30 years. It's been a long journey for me, and I've changed my vegan diet numerous times. Yeah. I continually try to make it healthier and healthier, but many people are not in the same place. And just to get them open to listen and be interested, maybe a kale salad with blueberries isn't what's going to do it. It really depends on the individual. Some people, they just get it right away and they jump in. But for other people, it may have to be a chocolate cake or an apple pie so they know that they're not going to miss all of the things that are important to them, those treats. I guess for me, the priority is eliminating animal suffering and saving our environment. Individual health is important, and for those who are interested in individual health, they will seek what appears to be best for them. And I know a lot of us in activism use health as an important tool, reaching out to the individual. There are so many different things that can work, and we have to use them all and know when it's best to use them. But I still think even the people that are interested in health, unless they're in some crazy health crisis and they know they can't eat certain foods, people still love their treats. We just posted a pasta picture that we had had late one night, and it got so many likes on Facebook because people love pasta. And we hardly eat pasta anymore because it's not a really nutritious food. But we had an open package of brown rice spaghetti, and we don't have much food in the house right now because we're traveling and I'm not buying a lot of stuff. And it just seemed right for the moment, and we upped it nutritionally by adding lots of arugula to it. And it was really yummy. But people get excited over pasta. I don't. I'm kind of tired of pasta, except on certain late nights when I don't have much food in the house. I occasionally get a craving for pasta, but it's got to be a pasta that we make at home. I'm not ever interested in getting pasta in a restaurant because it's typically very low quality, filled with lots of oil and salt, yada, yada, yada. Did I just say yada, yada, yada? Anyway, people love pasta. People love comfort food. People love their desserts. So if you're trying to interest people, just to open the door a little bit, give them something that they like, that you know they'll like, with a little oil, a little sugar, a little salt, so that their palate is open to it. There are tricks to activism. I keep saying being loving, non-judgmental, and compassionate in your approach, but I'm serious about it. Just like adding a little oil, salt, and sugar to a vegan dish so that people who aren't used to eating vegan or healthy will like it. I think we need to dress appropriately. Many times when giving a talk in a professional environment, I will dress professionally. There are lots of different looks that we can have. And if we don't want people to focus on how we look, rather we want them to focus on what we're saying, we need to blend in with the crowd. So our look needs to blend in, and the flavors of our food need to blend in or be similar enough to what people are used to. Just a few minutes left. I wanted to talk about a little cozy drink I made the other day. It's fall, it's autumn, and to me, that's a time for cozy beverages, warm drinks. We don't have a fireplace here, but it's like cozying up to the fire kind of feeling I have when the air starts to chill. Later on in winter, we're used to the cold. But when it changes, that's when I like to focus on cozy drinks and food. It was late, and I felt like I needed something like a hot cocoa, but I didn't want cocoa because cocoa has caffeine, and it's not really a good thing to have before you go to sleep. And then I thought, I'm going to blend up a banana with some soy milk and water, add a splash of vanilla, and see what that's like. I've been really in a banana mode lately, and I certainly hope banana trees don't go extinct anytime soon. I know there's another one of those fear stories out there that the banana that we know is not going to last forever because of some diseases, but there are plenty of banana varieties that can take over. And I've tried some and I like them. But bananas have really been filling our hearts lately, adding a certain amount of creamy sweetness that we like. And this was a great drink. I blended up the banana, like I said, with some soy milk, unsweetened soy milk, of course, and water and a little hit of vanilla, and heated it up. And you have to be careful because bananas are a thickener. So they can get really thick. And it made a really nice, thick, creamy late night beverage. And what I love about bananas is they have melatonin and they can help you sleep. Now, I've also heard that you can make a tea with the banana peel, not eat it, but brew the water with the banana peel. That's also supposed to be rich in melatonin and lots of other good things. I'm coming to the end of drinking my herbal tea today, my sage, rosemary, thyme, and anise tea. And I think that means I'm coming to the end of the hour. I want to thank you for joining me today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring. I'm full of gratitude for you. I'd love to hear about your activism, what you're thinking of doing, what you've done that has brought some success. Maybe we could have a conversation about that. But thank you for everything that you do, because we're all in this together. We all breathe the same air. We all want the same clean water to drink and the same nutritious food to eat. It is all about food, and it's up to us to make it work for all of us. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining me today on It's All About Food. You can find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Send me an email at info@realmeals.org. And remember, have a delicious week. Bye-bye.